From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up, can changing the way you write change the way you think, feel, and act? Plus, Sacramento band Stereo Earth playing the reggae funk in our studio, and listener emails. But first, the story of life on a Yolo County family farm is being told in a national documentary for public radio. Jeff and Annie Main own Good Humus Farm in Capey, where they grow vegetables, fruits, and flowers. They're featured in the program Five Farms, which shows how farmers live their lives over the course of a year in five very different parts of the United States. Here's a scene where they're all admiring one of the crops.
Look at the size and the color, Francisco. Como bonita.
Muy bonita, yes, sir.
Vas a ganar sus cuatro cajas muy pronto. They are beautiful, Francisco. So these apricots that the guys are picking are the second apricot orchard that we planted here. And it's exactly the same variety because the Royal Blenheim that we grow here, as far as I'm concerned, is absolutely the best tasting apricot that you can find.
That's a clip from Five Farms, a documentary program about five farming families. Jeff and Annie Main join us by phone. Jeff, Annie, welcome to Insight.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thanks.
Annie, how did you react when you were first invited to be profiled over the course of a year on a national radio program?
Well, I was a little surprised they would choose our farm and that we're so not typical California farm. We're pretty small and, organic and not your normal farm. So I was a little bit surprised.
Jeff, what about you?
Yeah, same thing. It came through, one of those typical things that it doesn't come because of anything special that we did, but a friend of a friend of a friend knew that you were looking for somebody, and through the elimination process of, I think there were several farms originally, by proximity and whatever else, our farm was chosen, but we're just a little representation of, everything that's out there.
Did you do anything different as farmers over the course of the year when you were being recorded?
I don't think so. We had some real different things happen during that time. We had a graduation of our last child from high school, which was, that was kind of the end of an era for us. And last year there was a freeze that I don't know if it made it into the final cuts or anything like that. But every year is a little bit different. But we didn't. Our operation just kind of went along like it always does.
Annie, in the clip we just heard, there was a reference to someone called Francisco. Who's that?
Francisco is part of our crew, and he's been working with us since 1980. And so he's very much a part, strong part of this farm and how this farm looks, and it's his farm too. He really has ownership to it because he's been here for so long.
Yeah. Jeff, tell us what's happening on the farm right now. I know that over the course of a year, you plant all kinds of crops. What are you working on right now?
Right. We're frantically trying to finish up transplanting of our tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, flowers for the summer, because that was a real appropriate little clip that you had there about the apricots, because in about, less than a week, we'll be back in those trees that you documented last year.
Yeah. And then after that, Annie, what's the next big project?
The next big project? I'm not sure what you mean, but we have a peach harvest party 1st of August. And so as Jeff said, we're going to enter our fruit harvest and also the vegetable harvest. We're finishing up kind of the spring flowers. I'll have summer flowers. But in the middle of the summer, we have a large harvest celebration. It's halfway through the summer, and we have a big party. So that's the next event, so to speak.
Yeah. Jeff and Annie Main are owners of the Good Humus Farm in Capey. They're one of five farming families in the U.S. profiled in the public radio documentary series Five Farms, which airs each day next week on Capital Public Radio. A Capital Public Radio news reporter was one of the field producers on this project. He's Ben Adler. Ben, welcome back.
Thanks, Jeffrey. And hi, Annie and Jeff.
Hi, Ben. Hey, Ben.
Ben, farming is a year-round activity with long days, and the Mains are growing all kinds of crops. You couldn't be there all the time. How did you decide when it was important to visit the Good Humus Farm?
Well, I usually try to talk with Jeff and Annie ahead of time and give them some notice, but I also solicited their input on what day are some interesting events happening. So Annie and Jeff just mentioned the peach harvest. I was out there last year in early August when they had some kids from an inner city high school out there last July. I was out there, too, and I think we're going to hear from them in a moment. And other major events, and then just a couple of typical days on the farm when they were planting or when they were harvesting. I made a point of trying to get out there on days where something interesting was going on.
Well, you mentioned the peaches part of the program, and we do have it lined up. It's Annie talking about peaches.
It's end of July. We're getting the end of our Suncrest peaches. We had a really hot spell, and we're down to a medium hot spell.
My clothes are dirty. I can't believe I took a shower yesterday.
And for the next 4 days, we have a group of inner city teens with an organization called Environmental Traveling Companions. There's 14 teens from Richmond to Boston.
Ew! Are there bugs in there?
Yes.
Because something just touched me.
So we're using like this shovel type, I guess they call it the hoe. It's just with the sharp edge, digging inside the ground and try to snap the root of the weed out of the ground.
I'm gonna go back home so hardcore, I'm gonna change my whole pink room to dirt.
And they're on a 24-day watershed trip, and part of the watershed trip is at the farm, seeing how agriculture uses the water that comes from the mountains to the ocean.
That's a really charming scene. Annie, why do you and Jeff work with these inner city kids?
Well, I think it's really important that children and everybody out there actually knows where their food comes from. And I think the inner city teens, you know, are pretty disconnected, or just the city folks are somewhat disconnected from the reality of what it takes to produce food. And so it's been real an interest in mine to make sure that we do farm education and bring kids to the farm to see that. And you know, I tell every single group that why I bring them here is so that they can see the farm and see how much work it takes, and that as they go into their life, they have the possibility of becoming a farmer, because we need more farmers, but also that they hold the knowledge of where a farm is and what it is. And so when they make a decision in whatever venue they choose an occupation, they'll remember us, and they'll make positive, you know, decisions about how to caretake the food source and the farms. And so it's really important to pass that on, because there's only a few of us out here farming, and a lot of people out there in the world that have not a clue.
Also with us is Wesley Horner, who's executive producer of Five Farms, the documentary program about five farming families. Wesley, welcome.
Good morning, Jeffrey, and good morning, California. Greetings from Western Massachusetts.
Yes, thank you. Well, I can't imagine how many farmers there are in America. How did you decide who to feature, and how did you find them?
We interviewed all the farmers in America. Yeah. I wanted to be sure that we had a geographic and ethnic diversity in the five families that we selected for this series. And we first decided to concentrate on farming families. So this was immediately a smaller group of people. And we ended up selecting families in North Carolina, Iowa, Arizona, Massachusetts, and, of course, Annie and Jeff's wonderful farm in California. Each of them has something special about their farm to tell us. And they're all great storytellers, and I think you can hear already in everything Jeff and Annie say that they're great storytellers, wonderful information. The other thing that was important to me is that, as Annie said, so many of us have a kind of disconnect between where our food comes from and the people on the other end who work to produce it. So my theory was that if you got to know some wonderful characters, individuals who are doing the hard work of farming, that the next time you go to the store and pick out a package of pork chops or select some produce, you'll think, geez, you know, there was somebody just like I heard on the radio on the other end of producing this food. And that's proven to be true, I think, in this series.
Earlier, I asked Annie how she reacted when they were invited to be on the program, and she said, you know, that they felt they weren't really typical. Now, I think in Northern California and some other parts of the country, small, organic, farms are not so unusual. How does that fit in with your idea for the program? Do they have to be typical or not?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that the important things to me were that Annie and Jeff are great storytellers. You are Annie and Jeff. You know you are.
They are.
And that as with all the farming families in the Five Farms series, they have a keen interest in letting people know about their lives and their work. And I needed contrast, too. So I don't know if there is any such thing as a typical farm family. We found great differences, and on the other hand, a lot of issues in common between the Iowa family with their 1,200 acres of corn and soybean and the North Carolina hog farming family and the Hopi Indian family in Arizona. There are a lot of very different issues, but a lot of issues in common.
Ben, you are, I believe, a city kid.
Yeah.
What was it like spending all this time in a farm?
Very different, and I say that in a good way. I mean, I've grown up either, you know, in the suburbs near a city or lived in cities for most of my life, except for 3 months randomly in Montana. And this is just very different in terms of, you know, there's a passage where Jeff and Annie talked about how just about every day there's controlled chaos. But it's a very different kind of controlled chaos than you might get, you know, in the city. It was definitely a change of pace for me to get out there on the farm once or twice a month, sometimes with no one but Annie and Jeff there, and their two dogs, Molly and Bean, and I don't know how many cats, and sometimes a whole group of other people there. And so it was really interesting.
Jeff Main, what would you hope people who don't live or work on farms get out of listening to Five Farms?
Oh, you know, for sure. I'm hoping that they use their imagination to fill in the spaces, and, you know, that becomes, like you're saying, it becomes a story that they remember having heard about, that they can pass on, they can talk about. That's the value of all this, is that people talk, people listen, people imagine what's going on in their food system. Beyond that imagination, then they begin to have a desire to find out a little more about it.
What do you think is the most common misconception about life on a farm?
The farmers work so hard all the time. We have a lot of fun out here. This is a great place to live. And the really nice thing about living on a farm is at any moment, if you decide to, you can stop, you can stand up, you can get off the tractor, you can get out of that kneeling position, and you can look around you and you see growing a beautiful natural setting that is inspiring all by itself.
And Annie, how long do you think you'll keep doing this? Notwithstanding what Jeff just said about the fun of farming, it's still a lot of responsibility and it's a year-round thing.
How much longer will I
yes.
do this? Well, considering I don't really have any other, any other things on my resume, probably till I can't do it. I think that, you know, probably we've been in the business for 33 years, and I'll be lucky if I do another 33 years. That'd be pretty good, huh?
Yes. Ben Adler, final thoughts from you?
I was going to say, don't let Jeff sell you short on the degree to which they work. There's an amazing drive and a passion from both Annie and Jeff that you get an idea from the documentaries, but it doesn't entirely come across as it does when you're out there watching them work. And even when they pause and stop and take the moment to talk, you know, on microphone, you can just hear, and you do hear this in the documentary, just, you know, really the time and effort and the passion that they've put into Good Humus over three decades, it comes through, and it gives you just an extra appreciation, I think, for the type of work that Jeff and Annie and I'm sure, what, 3 million other farmers do,
yes.
You know, here in the United States.
Well, thanks so much. We've been talking with Jeff and Annie Main. They're the owners of the Good Humus Farm in Capey, one of five farming families in the United States profiled in the public radio documentary series Five Farms, which airs each day next week on Capital Public Radio at 10. That's in place of Insight. Also with us during this discussion, Ben Adler, the Capital Public Radio news reporter, who was a field producer on the project. He spent the year on and off with Jeff and Annie, and Wesley Horner, the executive producer of Five Farms. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Good to
be here. Thank you.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, can you change the way you think and act by changing your handwriting? A local author says yes. You'll hear all about it when we come back. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. Coming up on Talk of the Nation Science Friday, how the brain decodes the spoken word, plus the bacterial ecosystems thriving in our skin, and the tale of the world's first telescope. That's Science Friday after Insight at 11 on Capital Public Radio. Handwriting analysts say the way you write is a reflection of who you are. Does it work in reverse? In other words, can you change the way you think and act by changing your handwriting? A local author says yes. She's Vimala Rogers, author of Your Handwriting Can Change Your Life and a related workbook. Vimala, welcome to Insight.
Thank you, Jeffrey. I'm very, very happy to be here. And I have two things I'd like people to understand in the beginning. Because when people hear the word handwriting, they throw their handwriting, you know, behind, they put it in their pocket, put it behind their back. I'm not a graphologist. I don't analyze handwriting. I don't teach penmanship, which sends chills up the most determined spine. What I do is guide people in adopting the healthiest handwriting patterns possible to bring out the best in themselves, and it works.
How does handwriting reflect personality? What can we tell about someone from looking at their handwriting?
Well, I was sitting in the other room, you know, just looking through a whole book of autographs and comments and all. You can tell a lot about the personality. It was a wonderful adventure. How you write, and many people aren't, you know, we're all on computers these days. And I handwrite my books, as John Steinbeck did and other well-known authors did, and I, you know, throw them in the computer. But there's a whole different brain dynamic when you use a keyboard and when you wrap your fingers around a pen, a chopstick, or a pencil. There's a whole different dynamic. When you wrap your hands around a pen, whatever, the energy comes from the prefrontal lobe of the brain. And when I have many, many clients around the world because they have to learn, quote, the American way of handwriting, and my books are out there on the internet. And their whole, everyone, when you change the way you write, you shift the neurological patterns in your brain. It takes 40 days for the brain patterns to shift. But you must write every day. You can't just say, oh, this is interesting, and let it go. You really, for instance, I haven't seen your handwriting. If I saw your J, and I would say, oh, you might want to do it this way. I wouldn't tell you why. It's not my business to tell you why. But I would say, do it this way, Jeffrey, and see what happens.
Well, why would you be suggesting a different way to write a J?
The only reason I suggest anybody write a different way is that, you know, as we are born, from the day we're born and onward, our subconscious mind interprets what happens to us. And it lets our, you know, creative nature go wild, or puts a screeching halt on who we really are. It depends on how we interpret what happens. When you change your handwriting, you shift the neurological patterns and you tell the subconscious how to think.
My guest is Vimala Rogers. She's author of Your Handwriting Can Change Your Life. You have an alphabet that you've created, the Vimala alphabet.
Yes.
And that's what you describe as a healthy handwriting
style. It is.
Style.
I've worked on it for years and years and years and years.
How do you know it's healthy?
Because I have experimented with it. And, you know, I was born into a Lutheran family. And in the Lutheran church, you believe everything on faith. So my question was consistently, how do you know? How do you know? And I used to think it was my parents who didn't understand. It was me, because I had to know. And another thing, whatever I say about letters today or handwriting, I don't want anybody to believe it. I want them to pick up their pen and find out. This is not about belief. Belief lives in the brain. Proof and experience is where truth lives. Pick up your pen and see what happens. And it works. I mean, I have clients all over the world, especially in America. But when you change the way you write, all of a sudden you shift how you see. And, for instance, people have issues with their parents. I say, oh, my, and I saw some handwriting in there that would curl your hair. Oh, you don't have any hair. That would curl my hair. Because, you know, we hold on to issues about our past and our life. That's not who we are. Who we are is who we choose to become, and we can choose to become the best we can be by changing our handwriting.
You said that the handwriting style, the alphabet that you've created is healthy, but
yes.
In your book, you also have what you call the five noble truths of graphotherapy,
yeah.
And you say there is no such thing in either handwriting or people as good, bad, right or wrong.
No, it's true.
But if there's no such thing as bad handwriting, how can there be healthy handwriting?
What I say, casual versus healthy. People often, when they find out what I do, they hear the heard handwriting and you can see the neon flashing. And I say, no, I don't analyze handwriting. Well, you don't want to see mine. It's terrible. It's illegible. It's execrable, whatever, you know, whatever negative. I said, no, rephrase that. It's casual. And because there's no judgments, we walk right down the middle. And my new book, which I gave you a copy of today, is called Transform Your Life Through Handwriting. I reworded the Five Noble Truths to say there's no such thing as good or bad people or good or bad handwriting. Those are merely viewpoints. And as I say, and I hope I can mention the word here, each of us is a child of God. We just covered up better. Some of us covered up better than others do. Everyone.
When you say healthy, what kind of changes could it bring about in someone?
Self-affirming. In other words, someone who's known they could do something since they were five and they've been laughed at, such as me with handwriting, with the letters. And I knew things, but they weren't in books. And I thought, well, I must be wrong because nobody talks about it. When I'd mention it, I was laughed at. Happens to many, many people. And I look at their writing, oh my goodness, cross those T's on top. And they say, why would I do that? I said, well, visionaries do. Mother Teresa did. Mohandas Gandhi did when he wrote in English. Nikola Tesla, Albert Einstein. I have a list of 35 different visionaries. When you want to see above the heads of people and do things in a revolutionary way, you cross your T's on top. And I mean, that's just one letter, and only one letter doesn't stand alone, but it's one of the most powerful changes anybody can make.
If someone were to adopt the Vimala alphabet, why wouldn't they just become like you?
Oh, I love that question. People look at me and say, well, if I write like that, I'll be, I say, God forbid.
Well, but if the way you write changes the way you think and act and feel,
it does, yeah.
Why wouldn't it have that effect?
Well, as I said in the book, and I say it many, many times in front of groups, whenever you learn any new technology, you have to do it first, ballet, for instance. You have to position your feet just the way, your arms, your hands, your head. And once you get the technique, your own style flows in. That's what happens with handwriting. I get many, many letters with handwritten envelopes. I can tell without looking at the return address who wrote them, and they all use my handwriting.
Earlier, you mentioned writing on a computer and with keyboards.
Yeah.
I hardly ever write by hand anymore. It's just the way it
That's
is.
That's true with most people.
Same with most people.
Yeah.
So what relevance could changing the way you write have to someone who rarely writes by hand?
You won't know it until you do it, Jeffrey. You know what I would offer anybody listening today, and I include you, is to take on the 40-day challenge. If you don't have my book, you know, Handwriting Can Change Your Life, that's fine. Go to my website, iihs.com. And go to the page on the Vimala alphabet, and then go to Handwriters for Peace. We have people, over 600 people around the world, changing one letter a day. Because as we shift our consciousness, that energy goes outward. Nothing's an isolated incident, not a thought and not an action. And we have people in, 72 countries now, who are writing, just say the letter A, the letter H, the letter L, every day to generate, because people say miracles happen. I say, well, you can call them miracles, but I look at it this way. It's the principle of physics. When you generate energy, which you do with your pen and intention, you magnetize results, and that's what we're after.
And finally, Vimala, what changes have you seen in yourself since you changed the way you write?
Oh, God, my H is my favorite letter. I do have a bias. And I've written at least 2 pages of it every day since 1972.
Of the letter H?
The letter H. And if you really want to be driven in your passion for life, and other people say things against it, say, fine, lovely, I don't agree with you, but, you know, don't change your handwriting. I've done it since I was little. And it's the only class in school that I got a C in, because I would not use the Palmer system. You can't cross your T's on top. You must do this with your D. I said, I don't do it that way. And because, you know, we're all born with something we know. We're all here for a reason. Everybody. And we cover it up. When you change your handwriting and bring out self-affirming attitudes, which is what I call them and which they are, all of a sudden, oh, yeah, that's what I'm going to do. And it's so exciting to see people wake up to who they really are.
My guest, Vimala Rogers, author of several books about handwriting, including Your Handwriting Can Change Your Life, a related workbook titled The Vimala System, and the new book?
The new book is called Transform Your Life Through Handwriting. It's not only a book, it's a journal and a deck of alphabet cards with a declaration on each one, and 2 CDs. I had such fun doing that.
Vimala, thank you so much for joining us.
You're very well. Thank you for having me, Jeffrey. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. Coming up, the reggae funk of Sacramento band Stereo Earth. You'll hear them play in our studio, plus listener emails. We'll be right back. You're listening to Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. You can download previous editions of Insight. Find our archives at capradio.org/insight. It's time to check in with our listeners. Joining me with some of their emails is Insight's Jen Picard. Jen, hi.
Good morning.
On Tuesday this week, we talked about the demise of Sacramento alternative rock station Quad. Marty from Placerville wrote to say he enjoyed the discussion.
But what really hit a chord with me was the reference to the long-extinct 70s FM icon here in Sacramento, KZAP. Oh, how I miss KZAP.
One of our guests in that discussion was former KZAP DJ Dennis Newhall. On Wednesday, I talked about some of the top stories in the news with Sacramento Bee columnist Marcus Bertone, including President Obama's nomination of Sonia Sotomayor for the U.S. Supreme Court. She's the daughter of Puerto Rican immigrants. As the preamble to a question, I said this about Sotomayor. She'd be the first Latina,
sure.
And if you forget about Benjamin Cardozo in the 30s, the first Hispanic to serve in the Supreme Court. A listener called Nell wrote that she was surprised that I referred to Cardozo as Hispanic.
His family is generally regarded as being Portuguese Jewish. This in no way can be considered Hispanic in the way the term is used today.
In a later email, she elaborated.
While Hispanic, as currently used, really doesn't refer to Spanish from Spain, but rather Spanish-speaking from the Americas, I have never thought that the term extends to the entire Iberian Peninsula.
Yesterday, comedian, actor, writer Donald Lacey joined us. His one-man show, Colorstruck, about racism, is playing in Sacramento. At one point, Lacey made fun of some people's surprise at how articulate President Obama is. Insight listener Kara in Stockton wrote to say she doesn't think any surprise expressed in the media was racist.
It's just that for the past 8 years, we've had a president who was the opposite of articulate. It's a refreshing surprise, whatever his race.
By the way, Kara ended her email with a smiley face icon. The same day, we featured two award-winning jazz musicians from the Rio Americano High School band program. I talked with the young men. They also played the song Bye Bye Blackbird. Listener Ed in Fair Oaks was delighted with what he heard.
The discussion was interesting, but far more amazing was listening to the young sax and guitar players. Their tone, pitch, and rhythm were far more mature than one would expect from high school-aged players. More amazing was the improvisational talents. So often with radio, discussion can seem esoteric and philosophic, and often lacks the example, and only offers the spoken word. It might be hard to do with a cooking recipe over the radio, so music may better lend itself to show and tell.
Well, thanks, Ed. But actually, we featured live cooking demonstrations at least twice on Insight. We love show and tell. Ed ended his email by saying he hoped we continue to stay on the air during what he called these receding times. We certainly do too, even though we will be off the air all next week during our hiatus for the Five Farms documentaries. Thanks, Jen.
You're quite welcome.
If you get something to tell Insight, our address is insight@capradio.org. Sacramento band Stereo Earth plays a mix of reggae and funk with a bit of jam and bass-heavy dub mixed in. Next weekend, they play Sacramento's Shanapalooza. It's a modest-sized festival at Swabies on Garden Highway. Stereo Earth are guitarist-singer Jason Vaughn, bassist-keyboardist Josh Myers, and drummer Greg Lloyd. They came by our studio. I asked Jason what kind of band they had in mind when they started Stereo Earth, and did it turn out the way they thought?
The band was formed in 2005, late in 2005. And just sort of playing with some friends in the basement, and some people started hearing the music, said, you guys should go out and play. And so we booked a show. At the distillery was the first place we played at. And we actually had the name Skankopotamus was going to be our name.
Skankopotamus.
Skankopotamus. And we were even scheduled to play under that name. And at the last minute, the guys revolted and said, we need to come up with another name. And so we looked around for some different names and, you know, try to find a domain that's available. And so we picked Stereo Earth, and we just sort of clicked after that.
Greg Lloyd, you're the drummer. Were you there are only two others in addition to Jason. Were you one of the ones that rebelled against Skankopotamus?
No, I wasn't in the band at that time, but I would have been all for it. So, I was the last member to join the group. I joined in early 2006.
I see. Josh, what about you? Where did you stand on the skankopotamus issue?
I have no comment. I don't know. I'm fine with it. I don't find it.
Yeah. It's fine. Okay. Well, what kind of music were you playing then back in 2005 when you started?
It was a lot more down-tempo reggae-influenced rock and maybe some psychedelic grooves in there. And then as we rolled through different rhythm sections, all the songs kind of got sped up and to the sound that you kind of hear today.
Now, on your MySpace page, it says the band is funk, reggae, and dub rock influenced. And most people go, well, funk, reggae, I know what that is. But what about dub rock?
Dub rock is a description of a genre of music that's emerged in the last 10 or 15 years. And includes, you know, bands like such as Sublime and some of the more traditional reggae bands. And the dub style is sort of like lots of reverb, delays on the drums, and so that's what dub is, and heavy on the bass, very heavy on the bass.
Dates back to the early days of reggae, though, doesn't it, ultimately?
It does. I believe Sly and Robbie were very influential in creating the whole dub scene.
Yeah. You got all your instruments with you, and you're going to play a couple of songs. What's the first one?
Love song.
Love song. Okay, well, let's hear it.
Thank you.
That was great. Stereo Earth playing Love Song in our studio. How do you write your songs?
There's two ways we write. One is we collaborate together. We just get together. We just start jamming. And we tend to record all of our jams. So we go back and listen to them. And we pick out certain ones that inspire us. And then we work hard on that and come up with some words for that and go back and re-record and practice it again. And then the other way is, we'll all just either come in with a song ourselves and, just kind of come into your head. Like with myself personally, I get songs in my head and I just, write them out and then show the guys.
What about the song we just heard? Was that the first or the second method?
Oh, that is the second method. That was that's a song that we actually haven't even recorded yet, so we wanted to play it here and let Capital listeners, Capital Radio listeners hear it first. But that's a song I wrote. It's the world premiere, actually. Thank you, Josh.
That's great. My guests are Stereo Earth. They're a funk, reggae, and dub rock influenced band, and they are playing Sacramento Shanapalooza Festival on June 6th. That's at Swabies on Garden Highway. Now, as well as playing, festivals and concerts, you also do social cause events, including a couple of medical marijuana events. And I'm just curious to know how that connects with the reggae sound, because marijuana is part of reggae culture.
Jeffrey, if you don't know that, come on. we're also going to work with Weave to get the women escaping a violent environment to get them a benefit.
Yes, I understand.
Later in the year, but I don't really have a good answer for that.
Jason.
Yes. Medical marijuana is an important issue in California, and the voters passed it, and after much battles with the different district attorneys in different counties, it looks like we've finally moved forward for the Compassionate Use Act. It's a compassionate use. And it's a little bit different than the reggae use of it. They use it as a sacred herb, a sacrament, in the religion, which is the Rastafari religion. So those two, I wouldn't say they're connected, but definitely we believe in compassionate use and for folks who need that drug.
Yeah. You also mentioned the Weave event, Weave being Women Escaping a Violent Environment, the Sacramento Domestic Violence Charity. How do you get involved with them? You're doing a benefit on June 13th.
Well, that actually looks like it's going to kind of fall apart, and we're so hopefully by the time, I don't know, check back on stereoearth.com, and we'll have that updated real shortly, but we're definitely going to work with them later in the year on something. So with the June 13th, we're going to be playing a second Saturday at the same location, though, the Jasmine restaurant there. Great hummus there. Excellent hummus, if you like Middle Eastern food.
Now, last August, you played a concert at the Laguna del Sol Nudist Resort in Wilton, and there were no photographs on your website from that one. Just curious to know, were there strategically placed guitars when you were playing, or were you fully clothed?
Actually, we were all naked. And no strategically placed guitars or anything. In fact, when you get up, that was the first time I've ever been to anything like that. I grew up raised Catholic, so I was almost against it. In fact, they wanted to do it the year before, and I said, absolutely not, no way, I would never do it. And then they talked me into it. It took them a year, but they talked me into it. And then but when you get up there, it's like when you have clothes on, you're the pervert. You know what I mean? It's like, so you better get your clothes off, because it's like, whoa, okay.
We also have to add that Greg, who was just speaking, was the first one to get naked at that event.
Oh, it was like a
before loading. He was loading in the gear naked.
Wait. I got tricked by them, though. No. They had Josh's girlfriend go with me to park my truck, and she was out of the car naked within 5 seconds. And I felt like, oh, my God, okay. I either got to go get naked, or I'm going to feel really weird going next to this naked girl. I'm fully clothed, so I was like, okay. And I didn't figure about the equipment at the time, you know, so it was a bad situation.
Yeah, we definitely don't advise any roadies or other bands out there, don't carry in gear naked, seriously. Not only does it look really funny, but you want to wash all your equipment down afterwards.
There's lots of little edges on there that are scratchy and metal. You don't
sure.
want. So Greg learned that the hard way.
And how did that gig come about?
I had a friend there. This is Josh, the bass player. We had a friend that worked there, and she's like, yeah, you guys would be perfect down there. You guys got to go. And so finally we did. We met the owner. We played for 3 hours down there. It was great. It was a lot of fun. It was like once you're there and you drop your inhibitions, so to speak, it's like you don't even realize it. And then occasionally you see some guy who works there, and you're like, what the hell is that guy doing with the clothes on? You know, it's kind of
reversal. My guests are Stereo Earth. They're playing at the Shanapalooza Festival in Sacramento on June 6th. This is Insight from Capital Public Radio. This is Insight from Capital Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Callison. My guests are Stereo Earth. They're a Sacramento band. They play funk, reggae, and dub rock. And they're at the Shanapalooza Festival on June 6th. And they're in our studio with their instruments. In addition to your own songs, you also play covers, don't you?
Yes, we do.
A few of them. And I understand they range from the Eurythmics to Black Sabbath. Now, what's that about?
We wanted to pick some lesser-known songs that when people hear, they might not recognize them at first because we completely change them and play them our own way. And we thought it'd be fun. And, when we were playing these gigs that we're playing for 3 hours or so, we needed some other music to fill in. And when you're playing to a crowd that doesn't know your music and you throw in some covers there, you get a much better response because they know those songs. And when they realize what you're playing, you know, they're jumping up and down and in the pool and out of the pool and all that.
So what do you play by, the Eurythmics and Black Sabbath?
Well, the Black Sabbath song we play is Sweet Leaf, and I think that's off the Paranoid album. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that one. But
okay.
The Eurythmics song we play is Sweet Dreams, which is a pretty famous song from the late 70s, early 80s.
And the song you're going to play for us, when you mention late 70s, it makes me think of it, Kung Fu. Kung Fu Guitar. Now, the original version of the song on the MySpace page notes that it's explicit, but you're doing a radio-friendly version for us.
That's correct.
Are there bad words that you took out?
Yes, there were three words that we realized that might be an issue playing on the radio. So we self-censored ourselves, and we've changed the lyrics slightly to still convey the meaning of the song without destroying it, and we like it.
Deep meaning song too. This song's so.
This is a fun song. It was written the first way that I was mentioning. It came out of a jam. We had this great jam to it, and I had just watched the Uma Thurman movie Kill Bill, and I remember her sensei jumping up on her sword, and so it was kind of a tongue-in-cheek, a fun song about well, my kung fu is better than yours, and, the lips might be out of sync and all that, and that whole genre. So we thought it was funny to make it as a kung fu guitar.
Great. Okay, well, Stereo Earth are going to play in our studio Kung Fu Guitar.
Hey-ya! karate chop right here. With a one and a two.
That was great. Kung Fu Guitar by Stereo Earth on Insight. Josh, our listeners can't see it, but you've got a really trippy looking bass guitar here. It's psychedelic, I guess, looking.
Yeah, that's the product of being unemployed for about 9 months and a lot of time on your hands.
Meaning what? You painted it yourself?
Yeah. I bought a $80 bass and just made it all goofy. There's pictures on our MySpace of it for the listeners who can't be seeing this right now. It glows in the dark, and it costs $80. My other bass is substantially more expensive, and I never get a comment about it, but I get loads about that one.
Now, you haven't used the trippy looking one. Is it just for show?
Well, no, I was, it's not as nice, so I just kind of brought it in case like I broke a string or something like that.
But the fancy one actually is a little unusual too, because it's got five strings and bass guitars usually only have four.
Well, that's becoming more and more common these days, and you get all sorts of concoctions that people with more time on their hands than I have want to do. You know, you get 10, 12, whatever string bass guitars these days. But yeah, true, most are four string.
Jason, on June 6th, you're all playing at Shanapalooza Festival. What is Shanapalooza?
Shanapalooza, this is the third year. It's a festival we based on a friend of ours' sister's birthday party. We decided to have a bunch of friends out for it. It was a big, huge camp out, big party, and it went so well, we decided to just keep doing it every year. It's produced by Robert Turner, and so this year we decided, or Robert decided to have the show down at Swabies, which is adjacent to Metro Marina, and so that's what it's going to be this year.
It's on Garden Highway, just west of the airport.
It's on Garden Highway. If you pull over on the side of Highway 5 and rappel down to where Sacramento River is below it, that's right where the Metro Marina is. But we can provide directions to anybody who wants to come. It's only $4, and there's four other bands. Six other bands?
Six total.
Six total bands playing.
Okay.
So it's going to be an all-day event. It starts at 3. It's sort of a day event. So come on out during the day. It's Grill Pub. Grassy knoll and everything. It's great.
Great. Well, thanks so much. That's Jason Vaughn. He's a guitarist. Josh Myers is bassist and keyboards player. And Greg Lloyd is drummer. They are Stereo Earth. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And that's Insight for this week. Today's associate producer was Lynn Weaver. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's senior producer is Jen Picard. Our boss is Carl Watanabe. Thank you for joining us. And remember, Insight is on hiatus all next week for the Five Farms documentary series that we talked about earlier today. Insight returns Monday, June 7th. Till then, adieu.